This program is brought to you by Retinoblastoma International. Thank you for joining us. Today we have with us two people who are very instrumental in the organization of Retinoblastoma International, and let me introduce them briefly. We have with us Matthew Ashford. He's an actor and producer working on television, film, and on stage, and he also happens to be one of the founding members of Retinoblastoma International. Thank you for being with us today, Matthew Ashford.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And we also have joining us Susan Dunn. She's the current president of the organization and chairs the board of directors. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you.
Why don't we get started here with our conversation today? And just for those who are listening in and don't know what retinoblastoma is, can one of you offer us a quick rundown of what retinoblastoma is and who is affected by it?
Retinoblastoma is an eye cancer that occurs in young children. When the tumors are present in one eye, it's referred to as unilateral retinoblastoma. And when the tumors are present in both eyes, it's referred to as bilateral retinoblastoma. Even though it's considered to be an uncommon disease, retinoblastoma is the most frequently occurring eye cancer in children. It's a malignant tumor that originates in the retina, and it's light-sensitive tissue inside the eye that allows us to see. So it can happen to you when you're in the womb up to about 5 years of age. More recently, they have been finding that there are some older children that have been affected. But basically, we consider this a children's eye disease, an eye cancer.
And I should mention at this point that both of you are parents of children who went through and have now become retinoblastoma survivors. Is that correct?
Right. Both my daughter Emma is now just turned 13 years old, and Sue, your son Tyler.
He's 27, and he had bilateral retinoblastoma when he was born, and we went through several years of treatment, so it was about 2.5 by the time that he had had both of his eyes enucleated, and through that time, he was treated with radiation as well as chemotherapy.
Right, and Emma had, at the time that she was treated, she went through chemotherapy and laser therapy, which was something that was kind of new at the time, about 12 years ago, and they had stopped using the radiation. But Dr. Murphy, who's Dr. Lynn Murphy at Children's Hospital Los Angeles, was pioneering this work with literally heating up the tumors with a laser and finding that the chemo actually got into the eye, the orbit of the eye, better. This was a huge step forward then, and now it's on to even newer things. So,
great, and maybe we can get into some of those in a moment.
Yeah.
So you were one of the founders of Retinoblastoma International, which is a nonprofit organization that was started about the time of your daughter was diagnosed, or soon thereafter, right?
Yes. My wife, Christina, and I, Emma was diagnosed at 4 months of age, and at that time we began the whole regimen of going into the hospital and having surgeries, which includes being put under anesthesia and then having the chemo and the laser every 3 weeks if it was necessary to treat. Emma had 6 tumors in each eye, and so she was also bilateral. And and probably towards the end of the first year, at the beginning of the second year, and we were just, beginning to have a hope that there was going to be a next year for her. We wanted to do more, and we were able to kind of join up with other parents who were going through the very same thing. And one of the things we found was that there was so little awareness of this that my wife, Christina, said, I want to see an ophthalmologist. You know, our pediatrician kind of said, oh, she got a lazy eye. You might want to check it out. And Christina just pushed to say, let's go to, the ophthalmologist, which is the next step. That's where the ophthalmologist dilated Emma's eyes, put 2 little drops in her eyes. Her eyes dilated fully. He looked right in, and he said, she has tumors. Took that long, and all of a sudden, everything changed. And as astounding and frightening as it could be, we found out later how amazing it was, because within 24 hours, less, we were at Children's Hospital Los Angeles, and she started getting treatment. But we started finding out about other parents from all different walks of life who went to see their pediatricians and were told, oh, you're just being a nervous mother, nervous father, or whatever. Oh, you know, just kind of go home, don't worry about it. And time again, they're sent home. Meanwhile, the tumors are growing at a fast rate. And this story was more astounding to the nurses and the doctors and the other parents sometimes to find out how quickly we had gotten there. Well, we felt very, very fortunate. And I think as part of our, you know, both Christine and I are Soka Gakkai Buddhists, and we really believe in, you know, cause and effect and creating value with what you got. And we just said, how can we raise this awareness? And really that has been one of the key components of how we started, is kind of getting the word out there to people saying, check your baby's eyes. There's nothing wrong with having your baby's eyes checked. They check their blood, they check their ears, they check all sorts of things, but very rarely do they check the eyes.
Yeah, it's not infrequent that a parent is the initial reason why a child is going to their pediatrician for some early symptom of retinoblastoma. We have parents telling us that they were photoshopping out the tumor in their baby's photographs for months before they realized that there was actually a problem. And so if a parent sees a white glow in the pupil, or there's asymmetricalness to each eye, or there's a white pupil in a color photograph, or they see crossed or misaligned eyes, those are all indicators that they should be alerting their pediatrician and recommending that they go to a pediatric ophthalmologist.
Yeah, you could get this. You get a strange reflection, or you could see it. I mean, some people have described sitting in church and with the lighting a little bit lower, and suddenly they just kind of catch a little reflection in the baby's eyes. You know, it shows up at those kind of times, and there's nothing wrong with getting checked because it. And this is the thing. At the worst case scenario is that it's this retinoblastoma, because that's cancer and it's always malignant. It's always must be treated. But there are other kind of anomalies and things that happen in children's eyes that can have devastating effects that very often aren't left untreated. There are people walking around in the world today, all over the world and in the United States, who are blind in one eye and don't even know it. They never knew it. And Dr. Murphy said one time, you know, he always has stuck with me. He said that there was a study years ago that said 6 out of 10 kids who drop out of school have trouble seeing the board or hearing the teacher. So I realized, wow, if we, you know, get together and start talking about, you know, awareness for this retinoblastoma, how many other kinds of eye disorders will be caught in the meantime? And then those children could be, from when they're months old, they could begin to have an awareness, and their parents and their teachers and their siblings and their friends and, you know, everyone around them can help them see better.
Anybody who's heard you speak about this in the past, not has heard about some of the activities that RBI has been doing, but a lot of people still don't know what RBI is and how it's organized. And maybe I can ask Sue if you can talk a little bit about how RBI accomplishes what it does.
Okay. We are an all-volunteer organization, so the mission of Retinoblastoma International is to be dedicated to eliminating the devastating effects of children's eye cancer and its complications worldwide. So the vision is that a world in which retinoblastoma no longer would destroy the vision or take the life of any child. And the main ways that we're promoting that is through early detection, because it definitely saves sight. This is a disease that grows quickly, so the sooner it's diagnosed, the more sight that will remain for that child. And we just think that raising awareness worldwide will save lives. In other countries, kids are not so fortunate as they are in our country. They can't travel as easily to get the kind of medical care that they need, so this is quite a problem. And so through research, raising awareness, education, and early detection, we feel like children can be helped with that.
So how does RBI actually accomplish the work that it wants to get done with regard to early detection or research or all these other things that you have as priorities?
One of our main ways that we try to help parents who are in search for extra information is through our website. We consider ourselves to be a good resource for accurate information, and we pride ourselves that the website will send them in the direction that they need to go. We also have developed a social network through Facebook that has put in touch parent-to-parent information. We send our brochures to anyone who will request them. We try to advertise that the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends a red reflex screening and encourages the dilation of pupils for all infants at birth and during those routine well baby checks that everyone gets. We also raise funds and work with the Institute for Families, the Vision Center at CHLA, and we devote a lot of our donations to the proteomics research that's being done at the Saban Institute at Children's Hospital Los Angeles.
So let's talk about this proteomics research. I want to make sure people know what proteomics is and some of the exciting things that are coming out in that field. Can we talk about proteomics in more detail?
I would say that it's been the number one fundraising effort that we had in 2010. In 2010, we will have given $40,000 to advance the proteomics research.
Maybe we can point out that any child who has gone through one cancer is often more likely to have another cancer, and that's sort of what the setup is for this. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Children that are diagnosed with bilateral retinoblastoma have a 500-time greater chance of developing a secondary cancer during the ages of 8 to 14. So parents are always on alert to check for those symptoms. But at this point in time, the only way to know if that's happening is through routine exams that can be detrimental to a child's health and also cause them to be stressed or concerned or anxious. So wouldn't it be great if there was a way, through a simple blood test, researchers and doctors were able to indicate whether a child's predisposition is for a secondary cancer or not?
So that's basically what proteomics research is about. It's about trying to find those biomarkers that will indicate whether a child is likely or not to develop a secondary cancer.
Yes.
Matt, do you want to add anything?
Well, Retinoblastoma International, some years back, became increasingly concerned about what is the next step. How do we protect children who have already been, you know, diagnosed and treated for retinoblastoma? No one was really focusing on children, and Children's Hospital was able to kind of say, well, why don't we just make retinoblastoma the beginning? And, you know, there's a historically, finding that, as Sue said originally, the RB gene it's the primary cells of the retina, the first cells that develop. And when something goes wrong, it goes wrong very quickly and very early in the life of the child. And that's why it isn't a childhood cancer. But it's also was identified early, when I believe one of the very first identified in the Human Genome Project. And interestingly enough, here it is again, as we beginning into this new world of proteomics, finding the proteins, you know, that are part of the building blocks of some of these diseases. And here is this, you know, the retinoblastoma gene being the first and an identifier to kind of like help make a difference, because it's all going to be connected. I'm very proud that Retinoblastoma International, we were able to put our money where our mouth is, or actually the people's money, because we've been fundraising for that point, and it's taken on a much greater scope. And it's very gratifying, and, you know, to the extent that we can express that to the people out there who want to know what we're doing, it's just a big thank you to everyone who's given anything. I will definitely say that RBI, Retinoblastoma International, has already made a difference. We're not doctors, and even if we have played them on TV, we cannot go into the operating room. We can't. You know, it's a very technical business, but they need us very much so on the outside, you know, raising the awareness, bringing, you know, making sure that lawmakers and advocacy groups alike and parents in general are aware that the care of the child is really at stake as much as ever in, you know, going into the 21st century.
And it's really exciting what you were saying about retinoblastoma sort of leading the way. So it sounds to me like the research that's being done in the proteomics sector is sort of focusing on retinoblastoma, but it's sort of a wedge in that it can open all kinds of doors that have implications for other types of cancer. Is that correct?
That is correct. They're going to. It's going to be test. The cell lines for retinoblastoma are indicators towards what drugs will be helpful for treating other types of cancers, even adult cancers. The research is so groundbreaking that it is going to advance the treatment of cancer in all aspects.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting. Whenever, you know, we would have these meetings and Dr. Murphy would come in and tell us what he's working on, it's, you really feel like, wow, something really is happening. And it is. There's a lot of things happening, but like everything, it takes years to bring it out, and so we just continue as best we can and just try to keep lighting the way.
Okay, well, I wanted to shift gears a little bit because I wanted to talk a little bit about your current fundraising effort. I know in the past you've had various activities to help you raise money for all of these important priorities that you have. And this year you've taken a little bit of a different tack. So let's talk about the calendar.
Well, I'm excited about the calendar because most of the time we have an event or we're doing a particular regional project, and the calendar is something that has allowed everybody throughout the nation and, I will say, the world to participate in helping Retinoblastoma International raise funds. And since it's the brainchild of Matt, I'm going to let him explain exactly how we got to this place.
Well, I was trying to think of a way to raise some money. Basically.
Before we go too much further, I want to just give an overview that it's called Matt's Musings Month by Month, and it's a 12-month calendar for 2011, and all of the proceeds go toward supporting RBI's activities.
My family had family calendars in the past that we've made up, and I was taking a trip with my daughters and my wife, Christina, and we were just sitting out by the ocean, and I was kind of drawing some pictures and doodling, and the ideas kind of came up about maybe just, you know, it started off in like, what was it like in the winter? Because here we are in a nice, sunny, warm California. And I grew up in the Midwest, in Iowa, and I have seven brothers and sisters, and, you know, they have just the two of them. So it's all very different. So I just kind of started, you know, doing these little pen and ink drawings about kind of life and thoughts and musings and, you know, about what it was like to grow up Ashford in the Midwest. And I kind of thought, well, maybe this would be something that could be fun or of interest to people. So I just literally just kind of riffed on that while, you know, while entertaining my daughters. You know, so we ended up with 12 drawings kind of like following in the months. And we said, well, what if we put it all together in a calendar and put it out there as a kind of a low-tech, low, you know, stress way of, for people to kind of support RBI and raise some much needed capital and not wear out all the poor parents who are working so hard behind the scenes. So, I mean, that has been the basic idea. And, you know, I've been so appreciative to everybody who's been so helpful and thankful to the folks who have gone ahead and purchased some calendars for themselves and for family and friends, because it's a great way just to have a calendar to give them and for them to know that they're raising money for a good cause at the same time.
Sue?
I just wanted to say that since 100% of Matt's work was donated, this is a way for people to make a donation and get something back, and that feels really great to me. It's a low price point. It's a way that everyone can participate in joining Retinoblastoma International in fighting children's eye cancer, as well as being able to turn that into a gift that you can give to someone else.
Yes.
Actually, Matt's charming calendar is available on our website at www.retinoblastoma.net. And there's still time to be able to have it mailed to your house before Christmas.
Great.
And also, you know, if for some reason or another you don't manage to get it before Christmas, you know, 2011 is just starting. So there's nothing wrong with later in December, earlier in January. People can still be getting it. It's going to be, you know, I think it'll be a really nice keepsake. So, you know, and we always manage to have one or two or three calendars around the house anyway. So why not?
All right, before we go, we're going to wrap things up here. I just want to ask you if you were to leave people with some brief words about what you want them to know most about RBI, what would that be?
For me, it's that retinoblastoma doesn't impact that many children per year, but the way that it impacts those children is devastating. So this is a disease that is uncommon, but it has such an impact on a child's life that it is important to move that research forward. It's important to raise awareness. It's important to get early detection information out there. We do it well. We encourage people to partner with us in our efforts to do that and make a difference.
If I could leave anybody with a few parting thoughts about retinoblastoma is that it is all-encompassing when you have to face up to it in your life, in your child's life, in your family's life. But at the same time, it is an opportunity to really be the change that you sometimes wish to see. Yes, it is a challenge, but I have to say that I've met so many extraordinary people because Emma came to us with this retinoblastoma, and I found that not only she, but all these kids have pulled so much out of so many of us that we never thought we were capable of and continue to do so. I mean, they are extraordinary children, extraordinary young people, and I look forward to many more years of working alongside them and working with all the wonderful parents and doctors and nurses and teachers and supporters and friends who really want to, you know, as Jason said, shine their lights. So anyway, I invite everybody else to come shine your light with us.
Shine your light to save sight and save lives. That's a good way to end it. I want to thank our guests today, both Matthew Ashford and Susan Dumm, for joining us and for sharing their experiences and their insights with us. This program has been brought to you by Retinoblastoma International. For more information about RBI and its programs, please visit their website at www.retinoblastoma.net, or you can also join them on Facebook at facebook.com/retinoblastoma. Thank you for listening.